You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Flora Fairburn. She works at and has co-founded a consultancy company, a global creative consultancy company called Fair & Company. It was founded by Flora and Julie Ferry, and she's collaborating with some of the brightest stars across the design and art sectors. Fair & Company produce creative projects and build art collections. Flora, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So I know you've done a number of things, but let's just jump right into Fair & Company. This is another iteration of what you've done before, working with brands. Can you tell us a little bit about exactly how Fair & Company works and what the mission is, and perhaps an example of something you've done?
Yes, so I've collaborated with Julie Ferry on this new enterprise, which her background is in the charity sector, where she's used art to raise awareness about charity issues. And we decided to join forces so that many of our projects, some of which we could focus on raising awareness or helping to raise money or whatever it might be for a charity. So now we are working together on a project at the store in London called Selfridges, where we're getting 90 leading artists, designers and architects to transform a chair, which will be hanging from the ceiling in the store for 6 weeks before being auctioned in aid of the Art Room, which is this charity which provides a safe haven for vulnerable children through art.
So tell me a little bit about what the artists are being commissioned to do. You said to transform a chair?
Yeah. So this particular charity, their logo is a chair. And so we've chosen the chair as an object to provide, to give to leading creatives around the country, to ask them to transform it in any way they like. So they've all started with the same blank canvas, the same white chair, which is an iconic 1940s design chair made by a company called Race. And they are starting to send the images of the chairs back to us. And the installation is happening next month, so it's very early days. We've only just seen a couple of chairs so far. So they will be, you know, we've got a range of artists ranging from people like Yinka Shonibara and Anya Galaccio and all sorts of visual artists, but then also fashion designers and architects, product designers. I'm waiting to hear back from a couple of musicians and that kind of thing.
So you're working with, you know, so many different people. I know this is a big part of how you work. You're curating, but you're also helping collectors to understand how to collect art. Is that true?
That is right. Yes.
So and how does that work? I mean, because that seems like such an important aspect of the art world, of what you're doing in terms of even, you know, branding and bringing in other people. How does that work? I know you were on the Serpentine board, and we're talking about the kind of future perspectives of where this comes from. So if you can talk a little bit about that, what it means to collect art and how your company and you in particular engage in I suppose teaching collectors how to collect and the importance of collecting.
Okay, well, it's really how it all came about is that I've been an independent art curator for 15 years. And in that time, I suppose what I'm most known for is discovering artists at the beginning of their careers and providing a platform for mostly unknown artists. And so pretty much most of my exhibitions have been in non-gallery spaces, in disused warehouses and factories and all sorts of places. Very seldom, really, are they in a gallery, although, of course, I have curated a few shows in galleries. But while I've been doing this, I suppose I've now worked with well over 600 artists, And in that time, some of them in the last 15 years have gone on to do exceptionally well in their careers. And, you know, some of whom started out prices at less than £1,000, some of their prices are well up into the hundreds of thousands. So I've along the way, I've learned a lot about how art can be a very worthwhile thing to buy. And so I've had quite a few regular clients, I guess, from the early days who've watched some of these artists' careers develop, and many of these people have bought work by these artists through me, through these exhibitions, or quite often directly with the artists. And so it's been a big part of what I do, because apart from anything else, obviously, it's very important for artists to sell their work so they can carry on being an artist, so they can live
right.
on their career.
So let's walk through the one of the first things you did that way. You're looking at new talent. I'd like to know how you find artists that you're looking at. And we can talk about the very early first shows that you did curating in disused spaces. How did you find those artists, look for emerging artists, and what were you looking for in those artists?
Okay, I'm just trying to think when I first did one. But the first one I did was it was really an experiment, really. I wasn't really thinking it through. But I was working at the time for an architect. And I was very interested in interesting architectural spaces, having this background of architecture. And I knew lots of artists just from, it's really through my work. A lot of what I was doing for this architect was finding clever creatives to make things for us, whether it might be a sculpture or a piece of furniture or something. So I basically acquired this love of going around workshops and studios and coming across very talented makers, sculptors, or whatever it may be. And it became a real passion of mine. So while working at this firm, I borrowed an empty apartment at the top of a very tall building in West London and decided to show the work by 10 artists whose work I'd come across that previous year or so. And so I did it really as a novice. I didn't, you know, I had no training in that area. I had architectural spatial training very much. So anyway, I put on this exhibition. I got a band to come and play music at it, and it was a huge success. The evening was rammed. You know, there were people queuing up to get in, and the reason why it was, I sort of struck gold with this formula of putting on exhibitions in very unusual places that normally the public have no access to unless they know someone who lives there or whatever. So it was just, I decided to give up my job pretty much then and there, and I've been doing that ever since. So from that time onwards, I started to get some funding from the Arts Council in England and various other methods of getting funding to put these exhibitions on. And they're very much kind of sort of non-profit events, really, because a lot of the work I was showing wasn't really, you know, let me see, worth enough to sort of even cover the costs almost if I sold it all, because it was very much early day careers for most of the artists. So it's just all progressed from there, what I've been doing ever since.
Well, so it's a non-profit model, but, I mean, for the artists, obviously. In other words, you need more overhead, but the artists are selling work. That's partly how that model continued and how you quit your job, right? The artists are
that is,
selling
that
work.
That is correct. But it was very much also, yeah, absolutely, but also very much a lot of the kind of art that I've shown from the beginning is not. Having said that, you know, I've learned how to advise on how to buy art because I've had to sell art along the way to help careers of artists but also to help myself. But on top of all of that, a lot of the exhibitions I put on have been very much a site-specific, atmospheric exhibitions. And, you know, like one was in a disused abattoir in East London, for example, and it's not the sort of place where you'd find glossy-looking sculptures to go and buy. It was much more atmospheric and quite eerie, and film installations and that sort
of thing. Right, so you're creating a kind of exotic location. As you were saying before, these are places where people don't normally get to go.
Yes.
But exactly. They're coming there and then they're getting interested in work. I just wanted to ask you, in that first show, you had such a turnout. It sounds like you also have a talent at bringing in a crowd. Is that the case? Because that seems unusual to have people in queue for an exhibit.
Yes, well, I think the answer is yes. I've been, in some ways, I have a talent for bringing in a crowd, yes. And obviously, since those early days, it's been much easier for me to get publicity for the exhibitions, you know, because in the early days, no journalist knew who I was, and they didn't know who the artists were, so there wasn't really any reason to write about it. But nowadays, it's quite often the artist or what the project is itself has managed to attract a lot more attention in the media. So it's been much easier now to generate well, interest in the project, but also knowledge that it's happening, primarily. So, but in the early days, when there wasn't publicity around them, I think it was almost, you know, I remember just printing off lots of flyers and dropping them off all over the place, and people started to pick them up and see if this thing was happening. It was kind of word of mouth and flyers and that sort of thing. But, you know, you do these projects starting off early and you kind of learn along the way what you're doing, and I think it's the best way to gain experience, really, in the art world as an art dealer, art curator.
The best way to get experience, meaning working with someone like you or going out there to do this?
Well, I think doing what I did, in a way, throw yourself into a new art, a career, really, because I didn't have... I hadn't been to study being a curator, put it that way. You know, I had obviously a fair amount of knowledge in the history of art. But I just learned along the way.
Right. So, I mean, it's amazing what you've learned along the way. That's an exciting beginning that's grown, and now it means that all your skill sets have come to bear with Fair & Company, where you're working with artists, you're working with collectors. Is there something you want to say now about Fair & Company and what you're looking to do? I mean, I'm interested in what you're doing in the future of Fair & Company, and also currently how you look for artists, or if you still do that, find emerging talent.
Yes, well, it got to the point with the emerging talent that I almost, as the same is for lots of galleries now, is that you ended up being contacted by so many artists that it gets quite sort of overwhelming, in fact, once people know that you're putting on exhibitions, you know. Now, it's more about all the artists that I've worked with over the last 15 years that I can tap back into and do new projects with if I want to. So this Fair & Company, the point of that is to bring it all back together, really, all the experience I've had, and create a big network of artists and filmmakers and photographers. Quite often, you know, I've had to commission photographers to take photographs of the shows I've put on or exhibited their work. So it's just being able to continue to work with them on the right kind of project as the right kind of project comes up. So, for example, with this new project at Selfridges, we were asked to bring in a range of talented, brilliant, creative people to transform chairs. Because of all the experience I've had with so many different artists over the last 15 years, I had a really good pool of people to contact. So it's really, Fair & Company is really about bringing it all together and being a place where people could come to if they want to buy art. I could advise them what to buy. I could help them build an art collection, that sort of thing.
Flora, thanks so much for talking with us today. It's really been a pleasure in talking to you and learning more about the new company. Is there anything you want to leave us with? This is being listened to by artists and curators and different people. Is there anything you want to leave artists with, or people who are pursuing careers in the arts, about what you're doing or possibilities?
Well,
that
I think actually, particularly sort of up and coming artists, I'd like to say, you know, sometimes it's very daunting if you haven't yet got a gallery. You you know, knocking on gallery doors, it can be very undermining when you don't hear back from galleries and they're all too busy to look at your work. And I think, really, I would advise that one of the best ways to start out as an artist early on is to get together with a couple of other interesting artists and find a way to put on an exhibition. It doesn't have to be in a gallery at all. You know, it could be anywhere. It could be under a bridge, or it could be anywhere. Just make it somewhere interesting with the right other people to work with, and then put on an exhibition. And if it's going to, if you're going to be a good artist, then all the galleries, they'll all come to you, you know. So I think that's the advice I give, you know, rather than feeling like you've got to find yourself a gallery to represent you, just go and put it on yourself, and they'll find you if you're good.
Laura, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.